Welcome back to the Tasty Morsels of Critical Care Podcast, and today we cover an incredibly common inpatient issue, hyponatremia. We'll often find one or two of these in our high dependency unit at any given time, mainly due to the requirement for frequent testing of sodium levels that seems beyond the remit of normal ward level care. The approach I describe here is neither comprehensive or especially robust, but I suppose it is how I approach it, caveat emptor and all that. So the overbearing demyelinating elephant in the room in hyponatremia is the risk of osmotic demyelination syndrome, the pathology formerly known as central pontine myelinolysis. If we correct the sodium too fast, will our patients end up with a severe brain injury? This is what we're worried about. This is rare, but a very real phenomenon. The brain is actually quite good at adapting to sodium levels that have lowered over a few days or weeks. Hence, while a slowly developing sodium of 120 often causes minimal or no symptoms. However, once the patient is in this adapted state, and as mentioned, this probably is after a few days at a minimum, then a rapid return to baseline sodium can cause osmotic demyelination syndrome, or ODS. By contrast, a rapid drop in sodium, for example, over a few hours of drinking liters of unnecessary water during a marathon, it's poorly tolerated, but the plus side is it can be corrected fairly rapidly without harm. Most of the hyponatremia we see admitted through the emergency department will be hypoosmotic hyponatremia. So the big bucket here will include things like heart failure, cirrhosis, SIADH, tea and toast and beer potomania. I'm going to put these common causes to one side for a minute, and we're going to look at some of the niche exam ones. For example, I said hypoosmotic hyponatremia there, so presumably there could be an isotonic and perhaps even a hypertonic hyponatremia, and there is indeed. The isotonic hyponatremias are usually from spurious lab results. So for example, when you have very high lipids, super high enough to cause pancreatitis high, or high proteins and things like high power proteins and myeloma, the measurement method used for measuring the sodium can underestimate it. You can work this out if it's a problem by always sending a serum osmolality. So if your serum osmolality is normal, but the sodium one is 125 and your calculated osmolality is low, then you have an isoosmotic hyponatremia. That should then be your trigger to check things like lipids and check the proteins. Hypertonic hyponatremia is another strange beast. This time the tonicity is high from something else, such as a high glucose or the administration of mannitol, drawing water from cells into the plasma. Again, a mix of clinical context and a serum osmolality will help you make the diagnosis here. So let's go back to our bread and butter, or rather should I say our tea and toast hyponatremia. The hypotonic or hypoosmotic hyponatremia, that's probably the commonest form we see by far. Context, clinical context as always will give you lots of clues. If the patient has consumed nothing but beer for weeks, then the likely cause is going to be a beer potomania. If the patient has a new cancer, then SIADH is probably high up your list. I confess I lean very heavily on the approach you can see on the Deranged Physiology website. I have Alex Yartsev's little flow diagram saved on my phone, and I look at it almost every time I'm trying to work this out. The first test, assuming you've confirmed that this is hypotonic hyponatremia, the first test in this algorithm is to look at a urinary osmolality. Okay, the question you're asking here is whether the kidneys are doing what they're meant to be doing in the face of a low sodium. A normal, sane and functioning kidney will try and lose water to concentrate the plasma in order to bring the sodium back up to a normal level. In other words, the kidney should be producing a dilute urine with a low osm. Next step is to check the concentration of sodium in this dilute urine. If the kidney is doing what it should be holding on to all the sodium it can, and urine sodium should be low. The problem here is too much water, not enough solute. So again, in this scenario, we think beer potomania, tea and toast, polydipsia. If the urine is dilute but the sodium is high, then you know something has gone wonky in the kidney itself. And typically this might be an acute kidney injury, or it might be a resolving ATN. On the other side of that little algorithm, we have a concentrated urine, in other words, a high urine osm. The kidney is holding on to the water and concentrating the urine. Now, this may be a very sane and a very sensible response by the kidney if you're frankly hypovolemic. For example, let's say you've got severe gastroenteritis. But the kidney also gets tricked by a few conditions into thinking that the body is hypovolemic. So things like CHF or cirrhosis, where the kidney itself just mightn't be being perfused very well, but the overall total body volume might be just fine. In this scenario, you should have a concentrated urine with a high osm and a low urinary sodium, as the kidney holds onto sodium for all it's worth in an effort to maintain effective circulating volume. On the other hand, you might find a concentrated urine with a high osm, but a high sodium also. List tells us that the kidney is handling water reabsorption okay, but has kind of lost a run of itself when it comes to regulating sodium. Something may be strong-arming the kidney into losing more sodium than it should, so something like a drug like a thiazide or an external actor, something like ADH. In this case, it would be inappropriate ADH, hence the syndrome of inappropriate ADH, SIADH. In addition, a lack of steroid, and in particular the mineralocorticoid part, or a dodgy thyroid, may cause the kidney to lose sodium when you shouldn't. Or, of course, this scenario could be due to intrinsic renal disease. So that's 800 or 900 words running through the deranged physiology algorithm, and you can only imagine that simply looking at that algorithm would probably have been a better use of your time. So please, go do that now. Next time, we'll have a look at how we might manage hyponatremia in critical care. Some useful reading, of course, Deranged Physiology, the wonderfully titled post, A Lazy Man's Classification of Hyponatremia, and O's Manual Chapter 95 also covers this.